Amen. Peace of Christ be with you. Hey, we have a few visitors here at Check and Hope Out. We want to welcome you to our campus. So excited. Hey, one quick really shout out. I had this amazing, beautiful moment this weekend. I was at the Hope basketball game on Saturday night, and I was on the phone, on my phone, and I was watching the last 30 seconds of the women's game, taking out Thomas Moore, breaking a 94-win streak that they had, advancing, yeah. Just when like Cody hit another 10-for-11 three and just annihilated whoever we were playing, I don't even know. It was beautiful. Congratulations to Coach Mo. Congratulations, Coach Mitchell. Go Hope. All right. It was beautiful. It was, it made you believe in a God who loves beauty the way that game was played. It's my great opportunity today to introduce the 2017 World Christian Lecture Speaker, Dr. Nicole Baker Fulghum. Every year we invite a world-class thinker, practitioner, who is making a difference in their area of the world. We've had people who are artists, musicians, people who are thinking about immigration, economics. This year we're focusing on education. And Dr. Fulghum is who I believe just somebody who I want to vote for president someday. She is wise. I'm voting for you. She is the founder and president of the Expectations Project, has a long career with Teach for America, is a University of Michigan graduate, PhD from UCLA, but heart and soul Detroit through and through. She has a heart for the underdog and the underprivileged, and she has dedicated her life to become an expert on education policy and advocacy. And she calls the church, people who follow Jesus, to care for educating all God's children, all children everywhere. And I highly encourage you to come out tonight to the Jack Miller Music Performance Arts Center at 7 p.m. to hear her lecture, Education Equity, A Christian Response. And we have the privilege to hear her this morning. Would you please give Dr. Fulghum a warm Hope College welcome?
Good morning, everyone. Thanks again for inviting me. I'm going to share a little bit about my own journey about purpose and privilege. And I'll start by reading Jeremiah 29 and 11. I'm sure you all can read it with me. If you have it memorized, you probably do. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you hope and a future. It's one of everyone's favorite Bible verses, I think. It's the one that allows us to think expansively and wonderfully about the very reason God put us on the planet. It helps us dream big and ponder our place on the planet. When I was a kid, my pediatrician's name was Dr. Thompson, and his office was actually one of my favorite places to go. I can still remember what the office looked like and what it smelled like. It smelled good. And I remember that feeling of walking in there slightly nervous, wondering if I was going to have to get a shot, every child's nightmare, but knowing that Dr. Thompson would make it all okay with his warmth, his kind, gracious bedside manner that was perfect for kids my age. And I also knew that I'd get rewarded with a dum-dum lollipop if I didn't cry when I got my shots. It's slightly like terrifying blackmail, I get it, but it worked. And so because of Dr. Thompson, I wanted to be a doctor. I wanted to be a pediatrician just like him. I wanted to make kids feel the way I felt in his office, a little anxious, but ultimately calm and safe, and thrilled when I got that candy at the end, of course. And for some reason, in my neighborhood in the 70s and 80s, if you were a smart little kid and you were black, all the elders said, "You're going to be a doctor, baby. Go on and be a doctor." So I don't know why, but that's what I heard all the time. And so I decided that plus Dr. Thompson, I would be a doctor. So I took all the right classes in high school. I took all the AP classes. I was a candy striper at the hospital. I don't know if that's still a thing anymore, but I did that. I planned for it. And then I started taking my pre-med classes my freshman year at the University of Michigan. Biology, freshman chemistry, and then my sophomore year, the dreaded organic chemistry, also known at Michigan as the turnback class. I remember sitting in this massive lecture hall with 300 of my closest friends, it was Michigan after all, and watching my professor work out yet another organic chemistry equation on the front of the board. And I realized I had 7 more years of this, equations and formulas, and a million other things that honestly, I didn't really care that deeply about. 7 more years before I could get to those, even more really, before I could get to those cute little squishy babies and hand them a dum-dum lollipop. At the same time, I was falling in love with literature and reading all over again. My freshman seminar had sparked a renewed interest in the power of books, essays, and writing. I'd always been an avid reader, even as a kid. I read anything and everything I could get my hands on, to the point where my parents literally had to take the book and force me outside to go and play and get some fresh air on a pretty regular basis. But my freshman year at Michigan, I loved the discussions in my English seminar because we talked about justice, we talked about race, class, power, and struggle, and historical struggle in most of our discussions. It took literature far beyond anything I'd ever experienced when I was reading Anne of Green Gables as a child. It connected to the world around me, to my history, my culture, my place in the country, and I thrived in that setting. So it was actually pretty easy to realize medicine wasn't for me and I was going to major in English. But I still had a full-blown identity crisis my sophomore year. Without the MD behind my name that I'd been talking about for 19 years, what path would I take? And what the heck do you even do with an English degree anyway? Like, what do you become with that? If anyone's here, feel free to see me after if an English major. It's all good. During the process of figuring out my purpose, I also actually had the luxury, though, of a few things helping me along the way. I had privilege. And this is what it looked like. First, I had supportive parents who actually encouraged me to take some time and figure it out. Secondly, I had very, very supportive parents who were paying my tuition at the time at Michigan and gave me the grace of one extra semester, just one extra semester of tuition if I needed it, because they knew I was changing my path and I might need to take more time there. Fortunately, I didn't have to take that extra semester, but they were willing to do it, and that's privilege. Third, I had the luxury of going to an amazing university that offered pretty much every class imaginable. So I was able to explore any career I wanted to, talk to brilliant professors and graduate students, and try to figure this whole thing out. Again, that's privilege. Fourth, I had made a commitment to Christ in high school. So I was in the place where I could pray, study, ask God, seek advice from Christians around me, and really try to figure out what is the God-given purpose in my life. Again, that's a certain type of privilege. Not that I earned, that was obviously a grace to me by God. And eventually I found my way. I realized justice issues were the thing that moved me, and my experiences growing up in Detroit with schools that were really challenging and seeing the inequalities was very clear to me that education was going to be the thing that I wanted to focus on. So I spent a summer between my junior and senior year actually out at UCLA in Los Angeles in a research program studying education inequality and race under a very sort of renowned leading professor and researcher, which was paid for actually by the university. Again, that's privilege. But that summer helped me really clarify this is what I want to do with the rest of my life. And so I applied to Teach for America and moved to Compton, California, and my path began. So yes, I had privilege. I had the luxury of figuring out my purpose in a very, very privileged context. I wouldn't have necessarily thought about my life as privileged at the time, though, and you may not either. It was very easy to compare my life at University of Michigan to the super wealthy kids that came to campus driving around in their BMW convertibles while I waited in the bone-chilling cold for the campus bus. I didn't feel privileged. Or I can compare myself to the kids who had come from really elite private schools and prep schools where they had taken classes in high school on topics I never even heard of until I got to college. I didn't feel privileged when I thought about that. Or comparing myself to the white students who didn't have to sit in class as I did, as often one of the only black students in my classes, and wonder if everyone thought I got into Michigan because of affirmative action, and maybe they thought I wasn't smart enough to be there. I didn't feel privileged. But I was, for all the reasons I stated above, my parents, the context I had to explore my purpose and ponder these very deep questions. So I was privileged, and I would submit to you, so are you. Every single person in this room has privilege to some degree because you are here at Hope College. You're here in college, even if you struggle to get here, even if you're going to leave with student debt, even if you are struggling in your classes right now, you are privileged because you are here. You have the luxury of spending time at a wonderful liberal arts college to ponder and think, what do I want to do? I'm sure you've asked yourself that question probably dozens of times or may even be still trying to figure that out. And let's be honest, it's going to be easier to figure that out with a college degree behind your name because it gives you a leg up on a lot of people in this country. And that's the question I want to leave you all with. Given our place of privilege as people who are Christians and in college, what is our responsibility to ensure that children growing up on the margins of our society, the disenfranchised, the 17 million kids growing up in poverty, what is our responsibility to help them achieve their purpose? How will they find the supportive frameworks that I had and to, I'm sure, varying degrees you all have in this room to help them clarify their purpose? Because God has one for them too. I submit to you that part of the answer is connected to our purpose. And it's found a few verses earlier in Jeremiah 29, actually in verse 7. The people of Israel had been beaten down. They were in exile. Hope was dim. They wouldn't have felt they were privileged at all. But yet and still, in that moment, God tells them a particular command about how they're going to find their own peace, prosperity, and purpose. Jeremiah 29:7 says, "Seek the peace and prosperity of the city to which I have carried you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it, because if it prospers, you will prosper too." So God doesn't just put us in privileged situations like Hope College or the University of Michigan so we can figure out our purpose and our ability to prosper. He calls us to pray for the city. And by that, I mean those who are disenfranchised, the kids who are trying to figure out what to do when they're struggling with poverty, hunger, violence in their communities, going to schools that don't have a lot of resources to give them a luxury of pondering what their purpose and privilege is. He calls us to pray for the city and the downtrodden and the disenfranchised and the marginalized, because our purpose and our prosperity is inextricably linked to theirs. So, God in heaven, what can we do today to help those who are not afforded with the same luxury of thinking and pondering and reflecting on their purpose in the beautiful setting that we're in today? Please prick and pierce our hearts to pray for the city and use us to help all of your children identify their God-given purpose. Amen.